Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It. The Art of Self-Defense stars Jesse Eisenberg as a man named Casey Davies, who's low-key, dachshund-loving, kind of a sweet guy, who is often on the receiving end of some rude behavior by coworkers and sometimes even strangers. But when he's on the receiving end of some truly violent behavior, he is randomly attacked by a biker gang. He decides to do something about it and his situation. He enrolls in a martial arts academy that turns out to be a little more cult than karate. The film is a dark comedy that offers a skewering commentary on how we conceive of and perpetuate ideas about manhood. The film is currently open in limited release in New York and LA, but will open nationwide this Friday. And Jesse is in studio. Hi, Jesse. I'm glad to see you again.
You too, Allison. Thank you.
What made you want to do this movie?
A few things. One is that it's absolutely hysterical. It's just, it's a great comedy. It's maybe the funniest script I've read. But more than that, it deals with some really kind of, profound issues in ways that are, masked as satire and humor. Mm-hmm. And it's, in my opinion, the best kind of satire because it's written from a personal place. The writer who wrote it before kind of the ideas of toxic masculinity became in vogue, oftentimes through horrific things that we learned about horrible people. But, he wrote it because it was a very kind of personal film to him, thinking about what it means to be a man, what value violence has in our culture. And so the movie is both on the one hand this very personal thing and on the other hand this brilliant satire, skewering kind of the absurdities of masculinity.
I described Casey one way. I've seen other reviewers describe him as milquetoast and everyman. How do you describe him?
Well, the way I think about him is as like an actor, and the way I think about how I played it was like that I was thinking I was playing like a 10-year-old version of myself. I remember when I was 10, I was kind of like scared of everything, but also almost like paradoxically assumed everybody is a good person, but also terrified of them. And it's that strange dichotomy that makes kids so innocent and also wary. And that's what this character is. He's pure, he's innocent, he assumes everybody's going to be a good person, but then when they punch him in the face, he kind of just accepts it. Of course, this is what would have happened.
So the film, it's interesting as a viewer, and it's not disorienting, but it's noticeable that you can't really tell when it is.
Yeah, right.
You get a lot of clues. VHS tapes,
yeah.
There are answering machines. When Casey is being recorded by someone else, it's a big old camcorder.
It's not a
smartphone.
Yeah.
Why do you think, how does that help the story?
Well, I mean, it does a few things. One is aesthetically, it's just more interesting to see that kind of stuff. I mean, nothing ruins a movie like somebody sending a text message to somebody else and then not having to confront them, because it's just not dramatic. But the other thing is that this movie takes place in this strange distilled universe where like a good kind of morality play, the themes are highlighted. And I think setting it in this kind of non-specific time and non-specific location allows for the themes to be distilled in a way that feels kind of emphasized, and it feels kind of like almost like this, philosophical exercise about what it means to be a man, rather than being kind of bogged down in familiar things or looking like it's some kind of political allegory against the current administration, or something that would seem more specific and by extension kind of like narrow.
Something else that was caught my eye is Casey in his life. His life is so generic that he buys dog food. There's just a big brown bag that says dog food.
Yeah.
As opposed to the brands, the colorful bags all around him.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, part of the humor also comes from the bluntness with which these characters live their lives. Everybody speaks in a way that is not natural. They say exactly what's on their mind. When I first meet the sensei, the karate mm-hmm. teacher, he says, you have a very feminine sounding name. You have the wrong dog. You listen to the wrong music. And this is how you should be thinking and living. And so everybody kind of speaks in these very blunt ways. And Casey says, okay, I'll go do all of that. Sure. Thank you. As opposed to like, people with ulterior motives and charm and, it creates a really funny tone that also can be very cutting.
Actually, that's exactly the clip we cut.
What?
The one you just described.
Oh, really? Oh, okay, okay.
Let's take a listen. This is from The Art of Self-Defense.
What's your favorite style of music? Adult contemporary? No. Should be metal. You ever listen to metal?
You mean like hard rock?
Metal is much more aggressive than hard rock. From now on, you'll listen to metal.
Yeah.
It's the toughest music there is. What about hobbies? Is there anything that you feel particularly passionate about, other than your newfound passion for metal?
I enjoy France. I mean, French things. I haven't actually been to France, but I'm learning the language and I would like to visit there someday.
No, that's not good. Historically, the perception of the French is that they're weak and that they surrender easily. Hardly traits that you want to embrace. Russia, on the other hand, is considered a tough country. Also Germany. Germany is very strong and capable.
My dog's breed is German.
Excellent. German Shepherd.
Well, a dachshund, actually.
Well, regardless, Germany it is.
Okay.
You must start thinking this way, you understand? In every facet of life, what you eat, how you interact with others, what arouses you. Everything should be as masculine as possible.
That was a clip from The Art of Self-Defense. Jesse Eisenberg is my guest. There's definitely like a Fight Club vibe going on.
Yeah.
And the sensei, we just know he's sensei until the end. I won't give it away.
Right.
He's kind of a Tyler Durden kind of guy, kind of energy. Why does Casey want the sensei's approval so bad?
I mean, it's funny. I just think about it as kind of like, if the movie is an allegory, it's kind of like a cult allegory. You know, like Casey is the perfect member of a cult. You know, he has no core convictions. He has no one in his life to steer him in the right direction or steer him away from the wrong direction. He's looking for meaning. He's looking for a father figure. And this guy, the sensei, just provides all of those things. He's charismatic. He's manipulative. He's confident to a great fault. And so it's kind of like, you know, it's funny just because, you know, reading about this cult up in upstate New York, you know.
Yeah, NXIVM, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I watched these interviews with that guy who started the cult, and like, it's very similar to sensei. He's soft-spoken. It's, you know, it's charming. It's philosophical. It's not the kind of scary thing that somebody would immediately run, you know, screaming from. And so that's what this guy is.
So it's all been billed as a dark comedy, and I would describe it as a dark comedy, and then it becomes a dark comedy
yes.
the second half of
that
the
That only
movie.
Works on radio, where you can emphasize these different things, yeah.
Do you have that sense that at some point the movie does take a turn, really, and the comedy kind of takes a little bit of a backseat?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like consistently funny. I don't think like the tones are irreconcilable, but it's never, when if you watch it twice, I mean, not everybody has to watch it twice, but like it actually doesn't, like there's nothing in conflict. Like it's always kind of like skates this strange tone where it feels like there's this dark thing happening underneath. The character's like attacked in the first, you know, few minutes of the movie. And so there's violence there. But I think because we're used to watching certain kinds of movies, or we're used to seeing certain kinds of characters, or within the sports movie genre, you're used to seeing certain kinds of tropes where the character kind of finds his confidence at the end.
Right.
That's not what happens in this movie. And therefore, I think it's surprising to audiences.
I really like the editing.
Oh, yeah.
Of this movie.
Yeah.
Like the fight scenes, because it really felt, that's the only time I thought, like, oh, this is maybe the 70s or early 80s.
Right,
because it really had that sort of, the way it was cut, the martial arts scenes. How much training did you do? And what did you think of them at the end? Once you, I mean, you did all the acting, yeah, and you're in the field, and then you see what the editors have done with your film.
I did about 3 weeks of, like, intensive training, like there's some boxing gym in Wall Street. You could, if you walk past and you smell sweat, that's it. And we had like some intense training. And then when I got to set, it was like good that I knew some stuff. My character's like a yellow belt, so I was kind of like, I had like a more intensive training than I really needed. But it was good to learn the discipline. Mm-hmm. I haven't like seen the movie because I don't like watching like what
you
I've been.
You haven't seen the movie yet?
No, I don't like. I don't really watch what I'm in. So like, I don't really know the exact thing you're describing with the editing. But
you should watch it. Maybe that section.
Oh really? Yeah, yeah, I could watch some stuff I'm not in. Like the editing was like done, I think, in accordance with this kind of blunt style where it's,
yeah,
not supposed to be flashy, where the jokes seem to linger because the characters are lingering with each other. And I think it creates this kind of uncomfortable pace that makes you feel like you're not sure what's going to happen next.
I think because you're a writer, because you're a playwright, you might really like watching that. I mean, I think,
yeah,
it's really, it really messes with the pacing in a good way.
Oh, that's great.
You know?
That's great.
My guest is Jesse Eisenberg. We're talking about his new movie, The Art of Self-Defense. So the idea is there's a lot of discussion about that this movie is about what it means to man up, or quien es más macho.
Right.
What kind of conversations did you have with Riley, the writer, director, Riley Stearns, right?
Yeah.
As the movie started and then as it progressed and during your filming, all the Harvey Weinstein stuff came out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we started filming the movie September 11th, 2 years ago. I think the Weinstein story broke like October 5th. I remember it because it was my birthday and the weirdest gift to get. And yeah, and it was really strange, like, you know, because the whole cast and crew is reading about our industry and we're reading about people that we know that have been horribly brutalized, that haven't told us, you know, and so it's like this really, you know, horribly shocking thing to read about it, obviously, and then to go do this movie that kind of satirizes this kind of stuff. It didn't feel, it felt like we were taking it seriously in the movie, so it didn't, it felt like it, we were kind of like in accordance with what the way people should be talking about this stuff, but it just made the movie feel like that much more kind of like, I don't know, relevant to things we were all thinking about, and it certainly emphasized certain elements that were not the main thrust of the movie for me at the beginning, such as
like
misogyny, sexism, the way women experience, you know, microaggressions on a daily basis, and the way the, you know, the thickness of the glass ceiling that men don't, you know, men are not aware of. And that's a big part of the movie. There's the lone female character in the movie is a brown belt. She's played by Imogen Poots, and she's not able to ascend to black belt precisely exclusively because she's a woman, and this is one of the main things the film is dealing with. And so, like, yeah, those elements were just highlighted for us in a way that seemed that much more, I don't know, relevant, topical, and important to discuss.
Were the conversations, though, different, like that 3 weeks before?
Yeah, because, you know, the movie's so funny that you can kind of just get by thinking this is really funny. Mm-hmm. And then once, like, the world coincides with the themes of the movie, you're just impossible to see it any other way. It's been, like, to the movie's advantage in the sense that, like, we always took it seriously and we always took those things seriously. And Riley, who wrote the movie, was thinking about these things in a very, you know, in a mature way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no one's making light of those issues at all, even though the movie has these satirically comedic elements. And so, yeah, so it just kind of, yeah, I guess there was like a certain gravity to those scenes, but in a way that was beneficial to the movie.
My guest is Jesse Eisenberg, and the name of his new movie is The Art of Self-Defense. It opens nationwide on Friday. You are so busy. You were so busy.
Last
time you were here, you were executive producing a documentary.
Yeah, good memory.
You've had you're a playwright. You had a play at Playwrights Horizon?
Next door, Signature Theater. Yeah.
What was that experience like for you? Was that your first time having a play produce off Broadway?
That was actually my fourth play, but it was my first play that I wasn't in.
Okay, gotcha.
Susan Sarandon played the main role at Marin Ireland. Was the other character. And it was just, it was a great honor to have these amazing actors in the show, but very strange because I've been in my other plays. And so just,
yeah, what's it like when you're not in the play?
Yeah. It's a strange experience because you just feel like so indebted to these people who are going on stage without you in the trenches. Normally I'm in the play and I can understand, like, God, it's this exhausting thing and we're all crying for 3 hours on stage. And then I just felt like, okay, they're going there and I could go drink a lemonade in a different room entirely. And I just kind of had this strange guilt, you know, like, I guess what parents feel like when the kids go to camp and you're like, I could do anything today. That's kind of what it felt like.
I didn't feel guilty when my kid went to camp.
Oh, really?
I could do anything.
Oh, really? Okay. You were drinking lemonade before and after?
Yes.
I see.
I was happy it was a camp and safe. But.
Got it. I have a 2-year-old, so I haven't reached that stage yet.
Oh, give it time, Jesse.
Oh, really? Okay.
Give it time. What other films do you have in the pipeline?
I did a few movies. I did a movie, Zombieland 2, which is a sequel to Zombieland 1. Or they just called it Zombieland, I guess. It was implied. And then I did this movie. I played Marcel Marceau, the French mime. It's a war movie. It's like an epic war movie.
Oh,
but it's about him saving these children and developing his mime skills while saving these kids across the border from France to Switzerland. It's an amazing story about an artist kind of coming into his own creativity, but at the same time saving these children. It's a true story. It's amazing.
What do you look for in a script at this point? You've had so many interesting roles.
I'm curious
what it is that you think, yeah, this is how I'm going to spend my time. This is how I'm going to spend time away from my family. This is what I'm going to spend my days doing.
Well, goodness, I don't know. I mean, I've been with my wife for a very long time, and she's kind of always made me look at, like, the value system of the movie. Her favorite movie that I'm in was a movie called Rio, which is like an animated movie which talks about, you know, valuing the environment and everything. And so she's not like a big fan of, like, my art films as much as, like, she is about anything with a, you know, a message or some kind of, like, moral statement. And so, like, I try to find something like that. Like, even a movie like Zombieland is like a zombie comedy, but it has, like, this kind of real sweet, it's message about, you know, family, but it's also not, it's like counter to all this kind of misogynistic violence stuff. So I don't know, there's always stuff in each project that has value. A movie like The Art of Self-Defense, in my opinion, comes along very infrequently. It's my favorite type of tone, that kind of really brilliant satire, that kind of like just the cleverness of the dialogue and the themes. To me, this is like once a decade, I feel like I get to be involved with something like that's as in line with everything I like: humor, values, tone, artistry.
Is your wife your sounding board for these things?
Yeah. Yeah, although I'm trying to think of a more analogous object, which would be like somebody who mostly kind of like, yeah, tells me I've made the wrong decision and make the right one next time.
Oh, yeah. So she's the person who's most honest with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, she works with, you know, she teaches in 150 Title I schools in New York City. Right. She works at a domestic violence shelter. So she's in touch with people who are affected by things. So when she sees me, like, in a violent movie, she says, like, really question what you're doing, because my students see your violent movies in a different way than you see them. You're able to see the irony of, like, certain things, and my students don't. You know, so, I mean, not my students don't, but, like, my students who are under, who can't see a rated R movie but still see violence on a movie poster, you know, yeah, she kind of, like, yeah, I would say, like, keeps me very much thoughtful about stuff like that.
I thought about you last week because we had the Winklevoss twins in as guests.
Really?
Yeah, but there's a new book about them.
They fit into the studio.
It was tight.
Yeah.
It was tight.
Yeah.
If you could ask them any questions. Let me catch our listeners up. My guest is Jesse Eisenberg. Jesse played Mark Zuckerberg in the Social Network. Thank you.
Right.
If you could ask them a question, yeah. Mm-hmm. The Winklevoss twins, what would you ask them?
I'd probably just ask them for a loan. I don't think I don't have any other questions.
I mean, having played Zuckerberg, having really, you know, researched that role and what happened there, what would you want to know from them?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. I guess because I'm involved in the movie and kind of like heavily associated with it, I probably refrain from reading about stuff that much, just because, I don't know, sometimes when you're associated with something from other people's perspective, mm-hmm. you kind of just avoid, you know what I mean? I guess reading about it. So I don't know too much about them except what they're doing, like, I guess, in like Bitcoin or something.
Is that Bitcoin,
money now? I don't know. Maybe I'd be curious to know what they thought about the movie. But even then, I guess I'd worry that they would, I don't know, say something that I wouldn't want to hear. Yeah.
Well, when you were playing Zuckerberg, though, I mean, you had to play the Winklevoss twins were part of his ecosystem at that time.
Yeah.
So from playing Zuckerberg, as you played Zuckerberg, how did they think about him, them?
I don't know. I mean, the way I thought about it is a bit like, my family is like, you know, Jewish New Yorkers, you know, it's like, you know, three generations of people trying to assimilate into American culture. And for me, that movie and the relationship that character has with those people mm-hmm. that was what the theme was for me in terms of the way I thought about those characters was like, oh, these are these guys who were the establishment, you know, like, tall, healthy-looking, attractive people whose generations at this level of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And my character was like the kind of, you know, interloper. And so that's what I thought about those characters at the time, you know, that my character struggling to assimilate into this culture that is generations of people not like him. And, you know, so I thought of those characters in that way. So when I meet those two guys, I guess I have those residual feelings of like, you know, this emotional feeling of like, this is unfair, you know, that there's some injustice to the relationship. I don't actually feel that way, but that's what it would bring up, because I was thinking about it as an emotional character.
Yeah, it was just interesting. I thought, wow, I'm going to talk to Jesse next week, and I'm wondering what he would think if you met
that's
the Winklevoss.
That's great. Yeah.
Think about that. It might happen sometime.
Yeah.
They're in New York, you know?
Are they really?
Mm-hmm.
They're very noticeable.
They are.
Yeah. Something tells me you don't run in the exact same circles. I usually overdraft at the 7-Eleven ATM, but I'll keep my eyes peeled.
My guest has been Jesse Eisenberg. His new movie is called The Art of Self-Defense. Is there anything that you wanted to say about the movie that I didn't ask you that you think is important before I let you go?
Oh, goodness. No, thank you. You've been so kind. No, I mean, I said all these things about it that are true, which is like, this is exactly, I don't know if there's any person that likes me. This is like a perfect representation of the things I like in this movie. So, I mean, sometimes when you're acting a movie, you love certain aspects. I love everything about this movie, and I hope people like it. If you don't like me, you might still like the movie, but Yeah, I also get attacked in it, so if you really don't like it, you'll probably love the movie.
It's good for you.
Yeah, but now I feel like I'm selling a used car, so we can stop.
We can stop.
Okay.
It's playing in New York and LA, and it'll open nationwide on Friday. Jesse, nice to see you.
Thanks, Allison.
After the break, we're running down the best of 80s teen movies with James King. He'll be my guest. Don't go away.